Hello, everyone, and welcome to Jeff G Tonight, Chill Show Tonight, a show of autism. We have to talk about deep stuff that's happening in the Bitcoin community. Lots of attacks legally by Elizabeth Warren. They really want to crack down on Bitcoin. I don't think they will succeed. That's why I keep my Bitcoin. I'm totally confident that Bitcoin will prevail and, in fact, will thrive. And we'll talk about the direction that could be taken by Bitcoin, which is the possibility of being a smart chain of sorts. And we'll see, something has been published about this in October. I hadn't seen it. I have just learned about it today. So we'll have a look at this. Elizabeth Warren introduces bill to crack down hard on crypto. She wants to break all privacy, claiming you are a terrorist money launderer if you transact from a wallet which isn't nominated to the scum regulators. Poo emoji onto Elizabeth Warren. Poo emoji on you, Elizabeth. In the Senate of the United States, Ms. Warren introduces, be it enacted by the Senate and House of Representatives, the act may be cited as the Digital Asset Anti-Money Laundering Act. The term anonymity enhanced cryptocurrency means a digital asset containing any feature. So basically, they will define money laundering as any sort of crypto transaction that doesn't keep a full record of everything involved. So basically, that would hit on Monero and that kind of crypto, probably even put some obligations onto the exchanges and the banks as they transact Bitcoin. Not good. I hope it doesn't pass. I hope that there are enough politicians who are secretly accumulating Bitcoin that there will be pressure so that it doesn't happen. Rodita Sid says, Satoshi Nakamoto owns all of your Bitcoin. It just allows you to borrow them. That is one way to see it, I guess. He certainly doesn't have the private keys of people, so I don't know that he could spend those Bitcoin, but I guess you could see the Bitcoin blockchain as a whole, as a borrowing system. Wow. That is interesting. That is very interesting because it's how they see bank deposits legally. Bank deposits legally are you are loaning your money to the bank, basically, at close to zero rate. But that's a loan, basically. You are handing them money and they are handing you a promise, which is the little number that shows up on your account. A promise of reimbursement at some point in the future. Stephen Robinson says the U.S. government is one of the top 10 BTC holding entities. Yeah, but that's the problem. See, that the U.S. government will never self-interfere with their ability to sell their Bitcoin. And so they go in typical fashion against the general use case because it's a cartel. Again, it's the government doing what it does. It transforms everything into a cartel. So they have Bitcoin. I have Bitcoin. It's now in their interest to make my Bitcoin illegal so that the only Bitcoin left on the market are theirs. That is what the government does. It does this in every single industry, including meat processing, whatever you like. That's always what they do. And it always interferes with the ongoing of good business. Viral topless streamer MorgPie has been banned from Twitch. Oh my God, what the fuck is happening on this picture? I don't know who this person is. MorgPie. So this person had been exposed recently because people were complaining, you know, clearly this is someone, well, maybe with artificial breast, but displaying those artificial breasts at the line of the camera. The just to make a case that they're not a porn video, that they fit within the Twitch standard, but it's very clear from the context that they are naked, that 1 centimeter below, and you would see whatever occupies the place of their breast. So people were pointing out why does Twitch keep banning all of the beautiful booby streamer? But here we got a trans booby streamer who appears to be exploiting the system. They got banned now, so it's over. Richard Spencer had an amazing joke about this news item. The Daily Wire is exposing an exclusive report saying that top Pornhub staff admits to inserting gay and trans themes into mainstream porn to convert straight men. So that is something that I've been affected by at some point. I woke up a morning on Twitter, and it was after the Elon Musk acquisition, and I was seeing just homosexual porn, just dicks all over my feed, and I was like, can I get the dicks out? Can I get to the news that I'm interested in? Someone must have paid to show me all this homosexual porn. I mean, there were quantities of homosexual porn. It was amazing. And so I think that there are pressures. There are people, I know why they do it. They do it because it's leftism, it's anti-natalism, it's the more people we can convert to homosexuality, the more the leftist cause goes forward and the white family is destroyed. DK Shadow says, was it Sargon spamming you? Maybe it's Sargon playing in the background, paying Elon. But we realize that Pornhub is doing the same thing. And the administrator, who is a whistleblower on this, is explaining, yeah, we were pushed for conversion. Their goal was conversion. Basically, they wanted to tempt men through heterosexual porn, and then they would show a surprise homosexual porn, try to catch men into clicking there, and try to get them to eventually consume more of this homosexual and trans porn. So be very careful out there. There are people who are very interested at you not having babies, and they are willing to deploy extremely complex strategies to get to you. Nicholas Petris says, same for the disgusting incest content they were pushing. Oh yeah, I've seen that this was one of the top categories in the searches. So people fantasizing on incest content. And yeah, those are all things that you are naturally disgusted at, normally. And so they need that stimulus. They need to put it in your face to get you habituated through a detoured way to try to catch the potential customers who would click on this. Ayan says they want us to inseminate the asshole rather than the vagina. That is one way to look at it. Stephen Robinson says, did you hear Elon's plea to make babies on yesterday's Mega Spaces? I listened to a lot of this space. So there was this amazing space, amazing in the sense of the people who showed up, because it included Elon Musk, Mario Nafal, Andrew Tate, Alex Jones. And so it was a merry band of very unique people. That was interesting to get this meetup, but I still can't digest the format of spaces. I think it's intellectually lesser than what we were doing. Oh yeah, there was Vivek also, Vivek Ramaswamy. It's not interesting to me. Bloodsports, what we were doing was trying to push the intellectual content to be deeper and more real. Whereas these little spaces that they do, it's like, invite the most people you can so no one really gets to make a point and no one really gets to be committed to the quality of what we hear. And that ends up being a tragedy of the commons. an intellectual tragedy of the commons, where none of the single person on this space are capable of taking it further, of getting to the next level of analysis, getting deeper into one of the speakers. No, because it's one speaker and, oh, I want to talk and, oh, I have to go and I'd like to say something before I go, but I won't have time to really frame it. So please give me a speech so that I can occupy 1 minute to say one more thing that's as useless as the last thing I said. It's absolute crap. It's not interesting. And you have these people need correction on a sentence by sentence basis. Like they were saying stuff like Andrew Tate was coming with generalities around, oh, you had Alex Jones starts a discussion with the globalist, and then you have other people like Elon Musk were chiming in and, I think there's the anti-humanity and the pro-humanity, and that's how we should divide things. And Andrew Tate talking about the Matrix, you had layers upon layers of avoiding the subject. And that was Papa JF's role back in the Bloodsports days. I wouldn't let a single one of these layers develop without clarification. Hey, you want to talk about the Matrix? Let's talk about it. There's a bunch of Jews in it! See, if I could have been there for 5 seconds just yelling this, that could have set the conversation into a productive direction. But I don't get 5 minutes because, of course, they are so at letting everyone speak that at the end you can't get a single intelligent person will wait long enough. I know because I've done it. I've tried appearing on a Mario Nafal show before. And it's impossible. I mean, they got me at the end after leftists were spamming the discussion with irrelevant talking points. And every time I would try to jump in, there would be someone else on the queue that they have to let speak for 1 minute so he can say one more unintelligent thing. The Bloodsports era was letting us intervene live, cut people, and say, whoa, whoa, whoa. There is a lack of clarification. There is a clarification needed here. Let's talk about it. What are we talking about? But no one was there to do this. The closest to this was Alex Jones trying to veer the conversation. And as you would think that at some point they were about to say something important, Nicholas Petrus, no, I wasn't waiting in that space. Not that one. Because that one was too filled. There was no way they would add people like me. But I waited in a previous space with Mario Nafal. And I got to speak 10 seconds at the end while they were cutting me off, while they wanted to close the show. It's like, it's not viable. Make your fucking space about a subject. You won't ever get anywhere by letting everyone speak about everything that's on their mind. As they were almost reaching something intelligent, I could not fucking believe it yesterday. I was pissed. General Flynn shows up. General Flynn.
Oh, well, I'd like to add something because I've always been supporting Alex Jones and... And yeah, you know, the elites, they want to do this and that.
Are you fucking kidding me? I had difficulty getting to a sentence that makes sense. I had Alex Jones, Andrew Tate, Vivek Ramaswamy. Something important could have been said. And you spam me with General Flynn, like coming back from the past. In his time-traveling machine, who cares about what General Flynn has to say? And Alex Jones was like, oh, General Flynn is a good guy. He's been supporting me for a long time, so I want him to speak. The production of intellectual content is not about who you feel or want to speak. It's about what is the next interesting thing that could make this discussion more profound, more unique, more insightful. There is not a single person running this show. And Mario Nafal,
I don't know if he's on drug or if he has seven children and he's caring for them while he hosts this, but it's absolutely unstructured. Your fucking show sucks. It will go down in history. You have audience because you have the guests, and you have you're kind of the only space that does this kind of meetup of the minds. But holy shit, are you doing a bad job? And holy shit, will there be someone one day that takes your place just because you're bad? MB14 sends a super chat. He says, Jeff, I am a fellow Asperger's. I have 127 IQ. No, you have, I know you have 140. I have bought gold and silver in 2009. I bought 16 ounces of gold and 1,000 ounces of silver. 1,000 ounces of silver is the same as 1,000 days of salary in 1890. Can Bitcoin and dollars be unicorn fart dust? See, this is kind of, you're catching me in a bad moment right now, MB14. Because I want to be tolerant about you, because you did send me money. But there's something wrong in your logics here. It's, JF, the sky is blue, and so therefore, is that why the grass is green? And, oh yeah, also, tomorrow I'll go to McDonald's. There's no follow-up in your logical process. You bought gold, you bought silver. I'm happy for you. I celebrate. I hope that you have made profits on it. But it doesn't follow that Bitcoin and dollars are unicorn fart dust. Ultimately, it boils down to demand and offer. Can you guarantee that there will be demand for gold and silver in the future? No, you can't. So you don't know whether gold will be seen as fart dust. Suffice that some technology slightly improves, gold becomes suddenly relatively easier to mine, and your gold is less as less worth suddenly. Suffice that gold is found to, we have too much of it, there's no more demand. We don't need any extra for electronics, don't need any extra for rings, because the recycling business starts going and gold suddenly is worth nothing. So the same is true for Bitcoin, the same is true for silver, dollars. It's all about offer and demand. Bitcoin is better than money simply because it's finite. And in fact, one day it might be better than gold because it's finite. You should prepare for this. You should consider the possibility that one day the relative infinity of gold, I say relative because yes, there is a theoretical maximum amount of gold on planet Earth, but that theoretical maximum will never be reached. So effectively, gold is infinite. We can just mine more and more, and there's no guarantee that it will be rarer and rarer across time. If we continue with the same mining method, with the same mining spots, yes, it's going to get rarer and rarer. If we develop new mining methods that can reach deeper into the earth, there may be resources of gold that are close to the equivalent of infinite with respect to the current quantities we have. What are you going to do then? What are you going to do the day we find out that under the crust of the earth, there are just drifts of gold, just stalagmites of pure gold formed by some planet Earth process, shaking of the earthquakes or whatever, and someone finds a way to Elon Musk style build a machine to bore down into this place? MB14 says, okay, I sell my gold. I'm not telling you to sell your gold, but I'm telling you your enthusiasm is kind of irrealistic. Gold may very well do well. I think it will do less good than Bitcoin, so I'm in Bitcoin. The day I believe gold will do better, I'll buy a bunch of gold. Low Mercury Tuna sends a super chat on Entropy. He says, they call us Judeo-Christian. What do you think if we instead started calling us post-Judean Christian or post-Judean or post-Jewish to make it accurate, but mostly to get Ben Shapiro super mad? Well, I think that doing it, I think, would frame Christianity way too much as a derivative product of Judaism. And and that's important, like the filiation of ideology, okay? To what extent is the revolutionary phenotype part of the filiation of the selfish gene? Well, I often say that it is, that the revolutionary phenotype is the grandchild of Richard Dawkins. But at the same time, you have to realize that the principles of the revolutionary phenotype, I have achieved them how? I have achieved them by thinking anti-selfish gene. I had to put myself in the mood of, how do I prove that the selfish gene is wrong at least once? And then I achieved the revolutionary phenotype. So in a way, you could say that the revolutionary phenotype is totally within the line of filiation from the selfish gene. But you can also acknowledge and focus on the fact that it's the contrary ID. The revolutionary phenotype is the anti-selfish gene. Now, Christianity has the same relationship with Judaism. Christianity doesn't come as a direct descendant of Judaism, just changing a little things here and there. Christianity comes as a revolutionary phenotype of Judaism. And at many layers, it is Christianity says to the Jews, you were wrong. And here's where you were wrong, and that's better. At the level of just the tenor of the violence level, Judaism is a militant, aggressive religion. And the people who stick to the classical form of Judaism, maybe not the modern one, but the classical form of Judaism was a militant Islamist style religion that was converting people and leading them to do terrorist actions. I'm talking 2,000 years ago here. It was a militant activist religion. Whereas Christianity is more like a laissez-faire pacifying religion. So here you have the contrary relationship. So it's not Judeo-Christian doesn't work because of many reasons, but that is one of them. A second thing, who is the hero of Christianity? It's Jesus Christ. What is Jesus Christ? Why is he the founder and hero of the New Testament? Well, it's because he was persecuted by the Jews. He was rejected by the ancient religion. And a new religion had to be formed to encompass his inheritance, to receive his message. And so again, Judeo-Christian doesn't make sense in the sense that Jesus Christ pisses off the Jews a lot. Because what is Jesus Christ? It is the demonstration of their error. It is the, because don't kill Jesus in year zero. Don't kill Jesus, but instead integrate him to the current philosophy of the Judaic teachings then. You would have had a star there. You would have had a moral system that was more fit for the world that was to come. And yet you reject him, you crucify him, you pressure for his crucifixion. So in a way, Jesus Christ is the ever-standing reminder to Jews that, you may have an eye for the next Hollywood star, but your eye missed Jesus Christ. You were blind to his message, and his message was used in in even better ways by the peoples who have adhered to Christianity than even you could do with your own religion, which you were convinced of. In fact, because count the number of Christians today, count the number of Jews, and you will see that Christianity has surpassed. It was a better moral program for growing presence in the world. And the Jewish program was, first, it's abandoned as it stands because the modern Jews don't even adhere to the activist, militant, although perhaps in Israel they're getting back to it in a way, this kind of violent form of the Old Testament and other teachings. But the modern Jews of Western civilization have failed at transmitting even their own heritage because they are not as violent as the Jews that gave birth to those books. And yet they have also failed at reproducing. So Christianity cucked them like three-way. Kiksot says, you are not becoming a Christian, are you? You might hear me talk more and more about Christianity, but I'm not feeling any more Christian than I was 3 weeks ago or 6 months ago. And I don't feel any more a belief in God, honestly, that I've ever felt. But Christianity will be much on my mind because I have a new girlfriend who is a very devoted Christian. And whenever we talk, we often talk about Christianity, about why I don't believe, why she believes. And she always gives me documentaries that I watch. So I'm watching like 3-4 hours of content of Christian doctrine per week now, just to keep the discussion up with my girlfriend. So yes, I will have Christianity more on my mind and it will show up in my commentary. But in all honesty, much of what I read is more like a precision, but I'm not seeing anything new. I knew about Christianity a lot already. And I know about the beliefs of the New Testament, but I do learn a lot of things. For example, I learned that the Bible explicitly allows marriage with a non-believer. I kind of had the impression that Christianity never really made a big case about it, but I didn't know that it stated basically very clear the function of marriage in the Bible is to reduce fornication and lack of certainty around familial affairs. And so there's a whole system of, yes, you can marry with a non-believer. You are committed to the non-believer by God. You are forced to stay in the marriage. If the non-believer leaves you, you can remarry with a believer. If the non-believer is the one causing the divorce and initiating it, you can remarry because it's not your fault. And the alliance was holy just through the Christian part of it. And the non-Christian part of it, the non-believer, they have caused the divorce. Therefore, they have made this alliance non-holy themselves, non-sanctified. The Revolutionary Phenotype, someone has sent me a picture. He just ordered the hardcover version. I'm always happy when I see more of this hardcover version of the Revolutionary Phenotype, which is definitely the highest quality. I make more money from this one. I charge a lot more, so you do pay more. But yeah, I'm super happy when I see it continued to be printed, because it is the best form of the Revolutionary Phenotype. James says, France became Christian because Charlemagne had a Christian wife that converted him. Okay, well, I wouldn't want to give hope that this will happen in my case. I'm kind of a little more autistic and stubborn than Charlemagne. Ty Odyssey says, my wife and I have been trying to get pregnant for 2 years with no luck, and now we're both 35 years old. My semen analysis shows my results are average or above, so the issue could be with her. I would wanted to get pregnant first, then marriage. She wanted marriage first. Biological cul-de-sac or escape? It is all about your own moral preferences, whether you basically commit to a woman who is increasingly demonstrating that she is infertile. I personally have my own preferences on this. I'm a guy of loyalty. And so to me, when you choose a woman, you choose all of the risks that are associated with this. In other words, when you were with her at 33 years old, you were in a position to calculate, okay, it's not sure that she will be pregnant. Maybe she's going to reach 35, and maybe it's going to get harder to have babies. But you made that choice, and you have occupied her pussy, basically. You know, those protesters with their boards, occupy her pussy. You have occupied her pussy while it had a chance of making babies. And so it is my view, well, if it was me, that she has given you what she had to give, and you have taken it. By taking it, you have accepted to enter in a contract that binds you to her, and I would continue caring for her for the rest of your life, and try to enjoy life without children if it leads to this, or hope that, yeah, there is still much chance that she will get a baby between 35 and 40. You definitely want to... And here's another thing. I would personally stay with her and accept to become a biological dead end. But there would be a chance that she decides out of graciousness toward you, and for being graceful toward you, she decides to let you go. Let you go and reproduce with another woman, in which case I wouldn't have a problem with this. I was once in a very short story with a woman. Like, maybe we were together for 1 week. And I just inseminated her straight on the first day. And she was like, oh, oh, oh. She was like, whoa, you are going fast. And she went to get a test because she wasn't sure. I didn't know much about her, but she wasn't sure that she could have babies. And she immediately went to get a test because she saw, okay, this guy is coming inside of me. He wants babies quick. She had the grace of going to the doctor, check if she was still fertile, and she wasn't because her ovaries had something grave to them. And the doctor was immediately able to tell her that she would be unable to have children. And she was gracious enough to then come to me and say, look, I can't have babies, and I do see that you want babies. And so I think it's better we don't stay together. And it's kind of heartbreaking, but I'm very happy that she did this, that she was able to put herself, understanding that I still had hopes, but that she didn't, and that there was no way for her, there was no reason for her to pull me down in her infertile life. That was very appreciated. But in your case, it's different. It's not the first week. You have been benefiting from her potential fertility. Now, definitely, you need to get into the game of serious calendar work, serious temperature taking, and serious ovulation tests, because you want to concentrate your sperm injections at an 8-hour interval or 16-hour interval in the 3 days that matter where she can get pregnant. So you want to start measuring her temperature every morning at the very same time, just as she wakes up while she is still in bed. Put these points on a graph and you're going to see a little drop and then higher. When it's flat, relatively flat, oscillating, and then a little drop and then higher, the day of the little drop is this day of ovulation, which should happen go look at the ovulation calculators, time it with the menstruation cycle, and combine this with ovulation tests to know exactly what is that 2-day period where she is the most fertile. And you wanna inseminate. I mean, if you were capable of doing 4-hour interval, I would tell you 4-hour interval is the optimal. But I know that the male testicles are limited in their production and you're gonna get tired. So I would tell you, try 8 hours interval. Just inseminate. Make sure that she puts her legs up to the wall. You know, she lays on her back. Once the sperm is in her, she raises her feet the highest she can onto the wall. And you're going to get that nice pressure pushing the sperm into her uterus. This is going to put so much of the chances on your side. There is so much you can do to... Yeah, you can use a pillow to elevate your ass. So her ass, so she could lay down on a pillow. She raises her feet, try to reach the highest point on the wall. The sperm needs to flow from the vagina into the uterus. And you know, how many people will end up childless? Because they didn't want to try it, because they didn't want to do that extra effort. It's so sad when you think about it. Because people refuse the mechanistic nature of insemination. Can you believe this? Believe me, you will not regret once you see your child born. It's going to be a point of detail that she had to do all these efforts, to make it happen. There is a lot of discussion around Bitcoin. There is a school of Bitcoin thinkers who are totally going after the ordinals. They have flagged at a government entity the ordinals system as a virus, kind of. U.S. National Vulnerability Database flagged Bitcoin's inscription as a cybersecurity risk. Someone has probably done this as a troll. And it's specified here that as exploited in the wild by inscriptions in 2022-2023. I don't think this is going to be taken seriously. It is said on this notice that this is a report by a user. So it's not, the government didn't review this. They just received it. So I don't think we should be worried for our ordinals, but it does mean that there are a bunch of people who are pissed off at the fact that the Bitcoin network is being taken over by people who have interest in more than just Bitcoin. They see the network as a ultimate database, just like I did when I wrote the Ordinals letter about the revolutionary phenotype. They see the Bitcoin database as potentially containing more than just financial transactions. And now we are seeing a move in a even further direction than the Ordinals. The protocol Bitcoin might get Ethereum-style smart contracts on their BitVM plan. So Yahoo was covering this news about a month ago, and I totally missed it. There is a plan for Bitcoin to potentially have optimistic roll-up style system that will allow computations to be proven. You will be able to prove that computation has been done using a hash value. So it's going to be minimally weighty for the blockchain to record, because you're just going to give the hash value. But this hash value will have proven that you have run and operated a function on a real computer. So it's not a real virtual machine. It's just a verification system of a worldwide virtual machine that can operate around Bitcoin. What does that mean for Bitcoin? I wanted to talk about it today. DK Shadow says, I think they're going to use ZK proofs. Yes, that's what they will use. Colin Oxworth says, couldn't it make hosting a BTC node illegal if someone makes a child porn distribution ordinal or something? I've been wondering about this, because it's so easy for trolls to pay $5 or maybe $50 to create these ordinals that would be illegal to detain, to have, and send them, in fact, to whatever wallet they want. But there is a filtering process in that whenever you mint ordinals, you have to do business with an ordinal minter node. And these minter nodes, I don't know, but they could decide to censor certain inputs. Perhaps there is someone at these nodes that's sifting through all of the image and making sure that there's nothing that seems particularly illegal. Because they could be held responsible if they didn't. So perhaps they do this. But I don't know to what extent they do it. And even if that were the case, you could still be, in principle, you could produce your own node. But that requires more technical knowledge. But you could produce your own node and send illegal content from it. MB14 says, my fat girlfriend gave me 3 beautiful children, but she got vaxxed. Then I dumped her. Well, that is quite dishonorable from you. Even if you disagree with the vax, she has the right to decide for herself. See, there is another man in our community who's been contacting me today, and he's facing a big problem, and I had warned him. He is with a fat girlfriend. Now, he has been speaking with her for a long time on the phone because they are distant. There's the problem that she's fat. And I had told him, if she's fat to the point where you don't find her attractive, this is not going to change. It's going to be heavier and heavier on your mind, that you are not satisfied by the level of beauty of your partner. And so if you decide to continue with her, you better decide that you will be forever unsatisfied, and you will really feel like it sucks to have sex with her. And so are you able to impose yourself such level of suffering and such level of having to do by your responsibility for the rest of your life? If not, if you're not able to go for hell for the rest of your life, you better leave her now, because you have to decide. If you decide, I take this woman, you have to continue with her, and you're going to have babies with her. But see, you are providing an example of a fat woman who has led you to have 3 children. And so perhaps this is something that our friend should retain. Go with the fat woman, make babies. If it's the only choice that you have, it may be the last choice that you have. Maybe it's her or being childless. And so learn to adjust your expectations from the world based on what the market gives you. But, you know, he was talking to me about her making exercise and perhaps improving. And I was like, no, that's not happening. If she's fat, she may do some exercise, lose a couple of pounds here and there. They're going to come back with a vengeance. And there is no such thing as taking an adult who has grown into their own habits and level of food intake and suddenly make them thin. You can make this happen with extreme work on a specific time point. You can lose a lot of weight to a specific time point, but it's going to take a few months, a few years. You're going to be back to your eating habits, and you're going to reaccumulate all that weight. Compute anything on Bitcoin. I have read the research paper BitVM that came out in October 9th. So the system that is proposed here is basically the blockchain would do very little processing. The blockchain would be receiving hashes and doing some minor verification process between a verifier and a prover. So there would be two partners publishing their ZK proofs to the blockchain. One is the verifier, one is the prover. The prover's job is to run the code. And the prover's commitment is to demonstrate to the verifier that they have executed that code. So for example, suppose you have a line of compute that selects a random number between 0 and 100 for a raffle. You could say 23, and then how do I prove that I chose this number randomly versus I just chose 23 because I wanted to win the raffle? So that is what ZK proofs allow to do. They allow someone to prove to someone else, hey, I used an actual random function. And the way it works is by ceremonial imposition. So if I was, because I've been researching this subject in deep, because sometimes in my contractual work, I have to know about this. And so I happen to know about all of the math here. If I was to explain to you how ZK proofs work, I would give you the keyword ceremonial demonstrations. Imagine that I want to force you to choose a random number between 0 and 100. It doesn't work, right? Because you come back to me and you say 23. How do I check that 23 is truly random? How do I check that you have not secretly decided with friends, colluded, and said, 23 is what we want? Well, the ceremony could go as follows. I'm going to ask for 5 numbers. And you're going to tell me, okay, 23, 23, 46, 81, 92. And without having revealed it beforehand, I will now say, take the 4th number you had, add 27 to it, modulo it by 100, and repass this in your function. Now you're going to be like, what the fuck? Okay, so I'm going to take my number, 23. I'm going to make plus 27, so that's 50. Modulo 100, so that's 50 still. And now you're telling me I have to re-inject that number into my random variation system? Yes, do it 5 more times. Now, you do it 5 more times. I get the output from you. Okay, now take the second number in this other batch, add 87 to it, and repass it into the function. New guy says algorithm is not random, still not random. It's what you are looking for. There's a technical term for what you call random there. You are alarmed at the deterministic nature of it. The deterministic nature of it doesn't make it non-random. See, random is a relationship. It's a relationship between a bunch of people who shouldn't know the outcome and the outcome. this satisfies the definition of random while being deterministic. Now, he says determinism is not random. Well, then go fuck yourself. There's nothing random. Bye. Now, if you're interested at deterministic random, which is the only thing that exists in this universe, we can generate deterministic random using the precise kind of ceremonies I just displayed. And that ceremony, of course, if the verifier and the prover are colluding, it's invalid. So if the verifier was in the conspiracy and was sending 5 more numbers every time, was telling him choose step 87, but was using number 87, knowing what it would lead to, and colluding with the prover. If the verifier and the prover collude, they can make up a fake outcome. So you have to have a verifier system that is independent, decentralized, and uncontrollable. And you can do this. Now, in this article, they don't do it. They just show a use case of the Bitcoin blockchain for ceremonial demonstrations of the kind using ZK proofs. And they show that basically any function could be summed up by a circuit of logical gates, NAND gates. And so they say we could calculate any program. And we could have the blockchain simply be the place where we verify that each player, the prover and the verifier, have acted according to their imposed responsibilities. I think it's a start. I think it's promising, but I think it's very underdeveloped. The first being, and they acknowledge it in the article, a two-partner system is not reliable because one of the partner could decide to collude with the other, and there you go, you have a lie. So the difference with the Bitcoin blockchain, for example, is that the blocks are assessed by independent nodes, millions of them. So you would have to do a 51% attack to undermine that system. So the system would need to be expanded to arbitrary long chains of verifiers. This could rely on a stake-based system. It could rely also on a voting basis, 51% control. It could rely on ceremonial serial contributions, because when they did the ceremony of Tao, which was at the heart of determining the ZK proof system for a very used ZK proof system that everyone uses out there, they made a public appeal for ceremonial contributions, and I think they got something like 2,500 different individuals, each adding their add 87, reshuffle, add 23, reshuffle, add 5, reshuffle. When you have 2,500 people doing this, and only one of them needs to be honest for the whole system to be random, That is something that you can count on. If there's only two people, you will have people can bias the raffles and can bias the computations to advantage themselves. But in any case, I think it's an interesting exploration. I'm surprised that it doesn't even use ordinals. It uses the Taproot system, but it uses Bitcoin script. And it hypothesizes future Bitcoin codes that are not so far from the current Bitcoin codes, but UpNand doesn't exist, whereas they've been using it in the example. But so it would necessitate minimal changes to the Bitcoin script system. But, you know, I'm surprised that they haven't gone the path of ordinals, because ordinals help you insert arbitrary text. And so you could put anything you want in an ordinal. It could be a totally new scripting language. Also, I will note that this virtual machine doesn't have a scripting language, so it's really underdeveloped. So we're not very close to seeing this being a reality on the blockchain, but it could have massive implications for competition with other blockchains, because you have two models that have emerged. You have the Bitcoin model, which is not a smart machine, not able to execute very complex functions, and quite simple. You have the Ethereum model, which is able to do all the smart contracts in principle, but the costs are enormous to the point of impracticality. And then you have the second generation ETH blockchains that have shown to compete with ETH. And they do what we call either ZK rollups or optimistic rollups, which are all forms of democratic verification of, okay, I can tell you, I can prove to the blockchain that I've done these computations, just like I explained with the ceremony. But I won't put the whole system on the blockchain, because that would be way too costly. And so you have here Bitcoin cutting the grass under the feet of the ETH blockchain and potentially being more like Arbitrum, more like the Matic, the Polygon blockchain, and going for the advanced optimistic rollup format, introducing it right natively into the Bitcoin blockchain without having smart contract capabilities onto the blockchain itself. That could be a game changer long term, because if Bitcoin was to adhere to this, I think there may never be a flippening. Consider this. There may never be a flippening, and it may be forever that Bitcoin always gets better, because whatever ETH does that's clever, Bitcoin can wait for ETH to develop it and take the best of it, the cream of the cream. And perhaps what we could retain in crypto history could be that ETH developed something very important, but it was too painful in the way they implemented it, and that the optimistic rollups were the way to go, and Bitcoin could be the winner of the big crypto war forever because of it. That is something that I'm very interested in, because I think it will change life. It will change the world forever. MB14 says, I buy Bitcoin for my gold tomorrow. You have won me over with big brain. Okay, well, don't be so emotional. And yes, do buy Bitcoin. MB says, but the Pegasus system don't care about cryptation. It's just spyware that looks about what you write in your keyboard. Israel controls this system. You are annoying, MB. Thankfully, you are sending me money for all of this crap, because holy shit, are you annoying. It is unrelated whether Israel is spying on you. Because if you follow Papa JF's, instructions from the guide Surviving with Bitcoin here on Odyssey, you can search for it. You will never type on a keyboard your seed words. Repeat after me. You will never type on a keyboard your seed words. You will never say with your voice the seed words. The only thing that ever happens to your seed words is you click on them on the ledger. You click on the ledger to displace to the right, see each of them, and you write them down on a metal plate. That is the only thing that happens to your seed words. And so even if there's literally a Jew hiding in your keyboard, just waiting for you to type it, he's not going to get to your Bitcoin. Because your seed words are captured by the ledger, they are stuck there, and then they are printed on a metal plate, and then you unplug your ledger, and you never plug it back in. Never. Do you understand me, MB? Because if you're going to be selling so much gold and silver to buy Bitcoin, I want you to do it in a safe manner, and I want you to go out there and search for my Surviving with Bitcoin guide and follow it word by word, okay? Special counsel asks Supreme Court to immediately weigh in on Trump presidential immunity defense. Special counsel Jack Smith has asked the Supreme Court to immediately weigh in on former President Trump's federal 2020 election case. So basically, this guy's argument is, hey, we wanted to catch Trump before the election. And so now we know that he has this argument that he's going to use the appeal court to defend it. We know it's going to be very long. We would like the Supreme Court to intervene immediately to tell Trump that his argument is bad, and so that we can find him guilty before the election. That is a very bizarre demand, and I hope that the Supreme Court rejects it because the goal of justice shouldn't be to catch presidents before they can be elected. That is not a punitive function of justice. That is kind of a side effect of justice that you are trying to pursue because you hate Trump. I hope this is what the Supreme Court answers. That, hey, we're not going to process your things on an emergency basis because you want to tarnish the reputation of someone who happens to be a candidate on the next election. Because we know this is what you want to do. I'm very annoyed at the way that these legal system leftists are going after Trump. It's so desperate. And I hope that the Supreme Court here will just cut the grass under their feet and say, hey, Trump is a citizen like everyone else. He's entitled to the slowness of justice that everyone else is entitled with. In other words, you cannot speed up your illegitimate punishment of a president. Saturn Shine says, did Melania leave him yet? I don't know. Melania has been leveraging last time. Last time she threatened not to go to the White House if she couldn't renegotiate her salary within the family. My God, that was rude. Staying in New York saying, I need renegotiation of my salary as your wife if you want me at the White House. Wow. I don't know what she's going to pull on the 2024 election. I don't know. Keith Woods was saying, no one knows all of the considerations Elon Musk has to take into account in trying to restore free speech to this platform. With that said, it seems like there would actually be less blowback for X if he just did the full amnesty people voted on and restored everyone at once. The current drip feed of unbannings allows media and activist organizations to generate a new round of hit pieces each time and act as if specific restorations are an endorsement of the person being brought back. That is very important. Very well thought here by Keith Woods. It's stupid what Elon Musk is doing. He is unbanning the clowns and not unbanning the true thinkers. People like Jared Taylor, people like Jared Taylor and American Renaissance, There are people like Nick Fuentes who have not been unbanned yet. It's ridiculous. If you were to unban them all at once and do what you had promised, which was amnesty, I haven't seen amnesty being given. And I've seen the people who would have been subject to amnesty be treated unfairly, like the way Elon Musk was dismissing Alex Jones because my baby died. It's unfair. It's not what you had promised, Elon. And you're imposing yourself a cycle of news and harassment and media matters, gay ups, that you don't even have to go through. If you were to all unban them at the same time, they wouldn't know. They could write one article about their favorite personality of the alt-right, but that would be it. It wouldn't be news 1 week down the line and you'd be done. You would have scratched the band-aid off. Someone was saying, science girl. This girl is funny. She was asking, what is something serious going on in the world that a lot of people aren't aware of? And I said, we have initiated a phenotypic revolution, which will result in the extinction of humanity. That's probably the most important ongoing event that almost no one knows about. But Science Girl is so funny because, I don't know, she had a bad interaction with me on Twitter. Oh yeah, I criticized one of her tweets. And I said, someone actually came to me and said, Jeff, what do you think about this tweet? And her tweet was saying, here's a spermatozoid, a sperm cell, and entering the egg, and you can see the egg illuminating. And that's because of zinc particles that are released by the egg at the moment of contact with the first sperm. And as a result, the egg illuminates. And there was a community note that came in to add context to our tweet that I found the community note was very fair. It was saying, the actual egg of humans do not illuminate. This was a laboratory context in which a coloring molecule was used that reacts to zinc. And so really what the egg does is really zinc. What you see on the video is the reaction between that detecting molecule and zinc. I think that was a very fair correction. And so I answered to the person of the audience, I think it's a very fair community note. And this girl was somehow offended that there was a community note saying this because in her second tweet, she was bringing the precision. It's because there's a molecule, it's not true light. Normally there's no light, but in this laboratory context, there was light. But my position was, even if you mention it in the second tweet, the first tweet can be taken out of context, and you've written it in a way that can very much be taken out of context, especially when it displays on the feed of people. There is a fake JF currently spamming Millennials chat. Yes, well, I'm definitely not on Millennials chat. So if there's someone out there faking my identity, it's definitely not me. And so she took offense. She took offense at me saying, yeah, you know, the community note is justified. Because she was on a campaign on Twitter trying to say to people, downvote this community note, it's nonsense. I'm being targeted. And I was like, okay. So I just gave my opinion, and she took offense. And she kind of dismissed what I had to say, kind of aggressively responded to my stuff. But then she regretted, and she sent me a DM. And I think she deleted her tweet, and she said, I'm sorry. Let me tell you what she said. Sorry, Jean, I didn't mean to reply in public. I hate all that sort of stuff. Will delete. and want to apologize for sounding rude. I'm worked up. I'm sorry. So my answer to her was, no problem. I understand it's tough to be a woman.